CSE, we now enter more the topic of factoring and as well ECM's support. And what I'm going to talk about some little more words on why special purpose hardware for factoring. And then we go a bit deeper in the factor algorithms, just enough to understand a nice approach to hardware and to understand the whole thing of what's going on. Then we go a bit more into the general number field scene, and in particular on lattice ceiling, because yesterday we saw line ceiling and the flow device and the new suggestions. But for Shark, we use lattice ceiling. Then we see again some hardware ceiling devices, and then I would say some more about how Shark came up, how our approach was, and go a bit more into details on the Shark ceiling device and ECM, because one big question is for the relation collections that to find the right balance actually between ceiling and ECM. So we really have to struggle a bit to find the right parameters, maybe less ceiling, more ceiling, better less ceiling, more ECM, finally get out with balance, and then we conclude. So again, the question, especially for factoring, if you really want to analyze the secure systems, is how far can we go with any technology or maybe with conventional technology? We want to know, and of course they want to know how the research community, how far they can go. Maybe we are also curious how far they can go. Actually, I can't see anybody from them here, so we can speak quite openly. So this is just one slide on special purpose hardware. So things, as Colin already explained in more detail, is we want to get a really good impression how far we can go by estimating the costs of an attack or the special hardware machine we would need. And then you can get better conclusions about key lengths and therefore the security of the algorithms. And it also includes some nice challenges for hardware design and development, and perhaps can also trigger new algorithmic ideas, because what you really need is to bring together people from different subjects, from mathematics, software, hardware, optimizers, looking at things from different perspectives, and of course we might end up with new ideas. And this one focus of this workshop is also looking at these lightweight crypto things. When you go through these estimates, you might also have estimates for smaller bit sizes, not just for the end of the road. And this, of course, helps you also to estimate the smaller cryptographies, the smaller bit sizes. And of course, it's a lot of fun to study all these things. Now we go to factoring. What we would want is to break RSA. That needs to factor the modulus n. And if we really try to do it, to break RSA by factoring, not doing other methods like having some leakage from side channel analysis and doing other stuff, then the best thing to factor such a general number is a general number field sheaf, as we've heard. And actually, it's not just that you press a red button and then the general number field as one algorithm runs through. Within the general number field sheaf, we need more factoring algorithms, because as we have already seen yesterday, you have to factor smaller numbers within the algorithms, and so you also need other methods. And as well, for finding the best machine, you might combine them. So what's always on the way is trial division, also used in the factoring records on software. And then you might use the power minus minus one method mentioned yesterday as well. So it's good to find small factors of n. It's faster than trial division. The method was basically explained yesterday, and it depends on the size of the smallest prime factor of n. Of similar style, you have ECM, which is quite important, as you already heard. And it's the same pattern, but for polar P minus 1, you have the group F P star, so you have only one shot for prime. You use that one shot to test, but instead you could also use the groups of the elliptic curves, and then of course you have more elliptic curves over FP. And you have also acceleration, so second stage. And tomorrow, or maybe this afternoon, we will hear much more about the implementation of the ECM method, so I don't say more about it now. Just to give you a picture, the ECM factoring record in software is 222 bit. The last one achieved in August 2006. And besides MPQS, ECM is just the method of choice for co-factorization within GNFS for higher bit numbers. Like for the medium factoring records, like 512, 576 for the co-factorization, was also nice to use MPQS. I think those statistics use MPQS there. To give you an impression of the sizes, once you put shark sieving device for 1024-bit integers, you have cofactors of bit size 200 bit, and you want to find factors of 40 bit size with ECM. The other category of factoring algorithms are the sieving methods. Colleen already mentioned, so I don't say so much about the general picture now. Just that you have the sieving step always, and solving the matrix always too. You have the quadratic sieve, the multiple polynomial quadratic sieve, the general number field sieve, and they all work basically with the same pattern. And if you have more than 350 bit, let's say, then GNFS for general numbers is the best. That means 100 digits. But one note, probably interesting, that GNFS currently is also the best known method for the DL problem over FP star. So if you really would like to build a machine, then you would end up with a similar device for the sieving step. The matrix step differs a bit. So before we go to hardware, it's probably nice to have the right impression what's done in software. So the first big success of the number field sieve was in 1993. It was the factorization of this Fermat number done by Lenz, the Lenz Fermat number Polar. It was actually the SNFS as a similar to GNFS, but it works only for numbers of special kind. Then we had 512 bit factored by CWI team in 1999, and then the first record by Franke Kleine team in 2003 was 532 bit, and then in December this was 1 week before that, more or less, but you had more records, actually 576 bit, so quite a big jump in a short time. And then in May 2005, we had 582 bit for the ROK NTT team, and the actual factoring record with the reference is this one, RSA 200 663 bit. And later on, the team also factored this number because it was on the list to get the prize, get the money on it. This one was just the idealistic record with no money. And for SNFS, the actual record is 911 bit, also by the NTT team around Aoki, you see German-Japanese championship here. And the ECM record I just mentioned has a reference here. If you go here, you might not even find it, but this sub link gives you that information. So just to remind you of GNFS, sorry, this is of course 4. We didn't change making progress on that. You have the polynomial selection first, which doesn't cost a lot, but from the mathematical point of view, of course, it's a very interesting step, because if you really make some breakdown of the time processing is that at the moment you have polynomials of degree 5 and 1, as we saw already yesterday, but maybe you could find a method with having degree 3 and 3, and then you saw the asymptotics in Pauli's talk, we are sticking with 1/3, maybe you can really bring it down. If you have a very nice idea, that would be a great thing. But up to now, the really cheap steps we have to deal with are the relation collection and the matrix step. And the other things are a lot of work, but they're costly. So what you have to do also to set up some limitations, you choose two irreducible Copeland polynomials, epsilon and f1, such that this condition is fulfilled, and then capital F 0 and capital F 1 are the homogeneous polynomials of them. And now, on the relation collection step, we look for numbers a, b, integers that both these values are smooth. They have a smooth prime ideal decomposition in the more general algebraic number field. Smooth meaning just only having small prime factors until a certain bound in this number field. These are algebraic number field, one rational part and one algebraic number field, which is an extension of the rationals. And these will be our relations that give actually the columns of the matrix to be solved modulo 2 then at the end. And many such pairs you find by actually relation collection, meaning sieving and PCM combined, and the right balance. So to give you some more impression how the matrix is built up, also to understand which balances we are looking for, some more words on that. What you try to find is solutions of that congruence in that way. And every solution of the matrix you establish within the GNFS corresponds to such a pair CD. And every column of the matrix corresponds to a pair AB from this relation collection step. And of course, more relations give you more columns in the matrix and therefore potentially more solutions CD. And every row in the matrix corresponds to such a prime ideal. And the upper part of the matrix or this corresponds to the prime ideals in the number field P of X not of 1 and the other one for the other polynomial. So a column more precisely corresponds to a prime ideal decomposition of that in this field and of that value in this field. To receive more columns than rows, these decompositions shouldn't have too many different prime ideas, and that is, they should be smooth. So that's what we are going to look for at the end. And finally, because of these squares, you end up with a matrix mod 2, because only the signs are relevant in the decomposition. So finally, if you have such a problem, you just check whether it's a 0 or 1, and then you fill up the whole matrix, and you solve that later on. So now, in the report, we want to go into the relation collection step. You can do most of the work by sieving, and you can decide to do less or more sieving, and to put some more stuff into the ECM part. So let's first look at the sieving, because that is actually the game you have to deal with, and you have to do it as clever as possible. So what you do is you have the smoothness bound you fix, and then you look for these ABs in a certain rectangle, and of course the first naive approach would be to check all coprime AB in this rectangle, and you look for all positions, whether both these values are AS rules. And then the two factorizations give you the one column of the matrix. You can also use line sieving to arrange it a bit more, a bit better. And what you normally start off is with a factor base defined like that. And for every line in the rectangle and every element of this factor base, not just all the primes or prime ideals up to a certain bound, you add up log p whenever you have a contribution. And so you measure whether it is smooth or not at the end. And so you have two such sieves, one rational sieve and one algebraic sieve. And such a pair is a potential relation, or also called sieving report, if it survives both sieves. You might later check on some smoothness tests for higher factors. So you can do better line sieving if you just choose a smaller bound. Then you end up with less line sieving, but of course you have some bigger factors left out, so you have to deal with in the factorization step. And what is the basic idea for Sharp and all the things Thorsten and his team did is actually to use latch sieving, which is much better than line sieving, because you end up with some good advantages that you have more survivors. And what you do is you choose a certain element, it's called special Q. This set, and then to every special Q, you associate a certain lattice like this, and then for every point in this lattice LQ, lambda Q, this number is already divisible by Q, so you have a higher chance to get survivors in at the end, and then you basically see from this lattice. Let's look at this. You have your factor base with all the primes, and then you intersect this lattice always with lambda p, and then you make the same addition of all the log p's for every point in the lattice, and then you have a certain bound, and if the sieving sum is large enough, you claim that it's a survivor, and you have, of course, in this part, really care on parameters. And actually, there are a lot of very nice ideas behind it. The whole lattice sieving as used in the estimates is based on this very nice paper by Jens Fand and Thorsten Kleinen on the continued fraction method, which is a quite conceptual approach to lattice sieving with a lot of nice improvements and ideas. And this is really behind that. There's much more things to explain how you do it. You end up with a much better method than line sieving. You can save a lot of money. So we thought that was just the background from the mathematical point of view. We come to that later, to break it really down to the machine. But it's good to know what's behind, how the methods are, how the matrix is built, to see where it can play. So as we already saw yesterday, in hardware there were already several suggestions. Twinkle, Twirl, Yast was the mesh-based thing, and as well Sharp. And we also had some first progress in ECM. So just some pictures to have them again. Twinkle, this optical device for 512 to 768 bit, a nice idea of Ali Shamir's group. Just using optics to compute. Then Twirl, this large neural network ASIC. Another sieving device, as we heard yesterday, there was some confusion. It's only working for 512 to 78 bit and was never designed for 1024 bit, but some people discussed it as it would work. That that was the suggestion actually yesterday by Rainer or Willy. And then we have the shark device. I will say more about that in a minute. And as we saw, ECM is very important for the support of the relation collection step. I only want to give you this slide because of this guy's talk to give you some references. There was this first ECM design in that paper with several references which came out around our approach to the shark machine. And around this sharks workshop, there was this nice work done by George Mason University, this Weiss group, which improved the implementation a lot. And here you have some more links to find the papers. The sharks workshops you can download from also the continued fraction papers, which is all about net sieving. And another paper presented by Austin this year on general sieving strategies, which might be a nice combination. You also find some stuff on the chess workshop website. And also you have the eCrypt website. There's a lot of activity going on in the Vampire Group, also on hardware crackers. There are also some papers to download, and of course announcements of further workshops on that. And there was a page Aaron Tromeer set up once. I don't know how much it is maintained anymore, but you find also some nice links on hardware sieving devices or hardware cracker in general. Okay. But now let's come to shark. When we started thinking about it, you had this collection of devices which were already suggested. And of course there was 12, which is an excellent thing. You can do it for 1 million or so, but you have a giant monolithic asset and a very challenging technology. And what we wanted to focus on was the question, can we do it with today's conventional technology for less than $1 billion? Can we do it? And how? And so there were several talks already on chess and sharks, and probably you never heard about the history, how it all came. Actually, shark comes from Spezial Hardware für RSA Faktorisierung. It was a joint research started in 2004, actually 1 year before sharks, the first sharks workshop came up, and it was one time we were talking to Christoph. There was a nice factoring records coming up at the University of Bonn with such an amount of knowledge around the whole thing, and there was the hardware, there were the hardware people on the other side, also very interested in cracking hardware, and so we were talking. Finally came up with a nice joint 1 year project. Really to go into it and actually to make use of bringing together very different people, doing a lot of brainstorming all the time. Also, like Connie mentioned in the roadmap, just going into one direction, then coming back, starting again, and really discussing the subject from very different perspectives. And what we never mentioned, but what we actually did, we analyzed a lot of approaches before we went into more detail with shark, mainly PC based, just as a starting point, we have a good feeling for that. Then small special purpose hardware, where you could actually find shark in that part, and also twirl-like approaches to really see what's going on. And for the question I just mentioned, finally, a shark-like sieving was the most promising to have led for less than $1 billion and with conventional technology. And we already had the impression that it should be a nice combination of a sieving device and a considerable ECM support. But at the beginning, we just didn't know how good ECM would really be. So we started designing a shark-like machine, and we didn't really think of a very particular machine, like more like a philosophy. based on that paper Jens Frank and Thorsten developed all the ideas around it. And on the other hand, we also started thinking on a nice realization of ECM, and of course we had the Hartberg people, and in particular Martin Zilka was already there at the moment in Bochum. Then we finally also did some implementation. And so at the end we had information on both things, especially a proof of concept, the very first implementation for ECM. So to give you at least a hint what we studied. So one principal approach or strategy would be, of course, to use PCs. So if you have many PCs, the small ROM, obviously, as well as expensive, and you use letter sieving, then you are stuck to small vector bases. You would really need a huge amount, like over 10 million PCs, let's say, and you end up with around $10 billion, which is far too expensive. Then you could think, well, let's cluster them. Could we have a cluster like of connected PCs, maybe 64 each, and then use it as one unit, the small one. Then you basically end up with the same cost, so because you need more money for the interconnections and the communications. So these things are nice, but far too expensive. Another idea would be PC-based plus ECM, maybe in special hardware or maybe in special units. So as we consider this one PC with many ECM units, just expressed by that, you could use many PCs with letter sieving and special ECM support, just to factor the mid-size numbers. And then you probably end up with a third of the costs. But with respect to our questions, you are still over 1 billion. Maybe you end up with 3 billion or so. So it's a quite interesting option because it's not that risky. You are pretty able to realize it, but it's also far too expensive. But in future, it might be a nice option because this is getting cheaper and might be more doable. So then the next idea was just to build a modular lattice siever with many small ASICs. So getting away from a huge monolithic ASIC, put the siever in many ASICs, use a suitable amount of ECM support, and of course a clever communication, as clever as possible. Actually, for here you need some space and ROM for the communication, but putting the things through, you need very small chips only, just to do the communication the right way, maybe DSPs for a first shot. So another idea was as well, of course, almost going through just with only ECM, just having some control units, small processors, but really highly optimized ECM. Very nice, but the first estimates show you end up with a chip size of a like football field. It's already green, but I guess UCLA uses it better to win against the other university. So probably it's far too expensive. It's nice, but it's not really doable. But one has to consider it, just whether it would be an option. And of course, then you have the dual-like devices, and we also analyzed dual a little bit, just roughly. And our feeling was that if you would go from letter sieving, from line sieving to letter sieving, and you would add a reasonable ECM support just by going through the parameters a bit, you could end up with a tenth of the cost. So a dual-like device just with letter sieving ECM support. And if you, we also considered it a little bit, if you think it's too risky and not doable because the challenges for actually building these huge chips are too high, then you might shrink have a little bit smaller drawer and more ECM support, because you do less sealing. You might end up with some higher cost, but maybe a realizable thing, which is not too risky. So that was the things we considered, but of course we wanted to do it with more conventional technology, so we finally came to the decision to study more the shark-like design and approach. So what is the shark machine? Colin already mentioned some aspects. So the shark machine, as we designed it in 2005, and then for a paper to really brought it up to some numbers, it was designed for 1024-bit. And it uses lattice sieving to perform the sieving step. And we came to an estimate for less than $200 million in 2005. And main ideas were that to have this modular architecture and to do the communication with this butterfly transport system. And we had in mind ECM, but especially this shark machine was designed not considering any ECM support, just mainly sealing and a little bit of ECM, because we wanted to wait what would come out of the ECM research. And finally, if you see the tremendous support ECM can give you, and with some updated data, you probably would end up with 20 millions at the moment. Roughly, we should reconsider it once and wind it up. But I don't want to mix up the numbers too much. But don't stick to the 2 million too much. Just to the principal approach, like having this modular architecture and this communication system. And conventional data buses, small specialized ASICs doing all the work. And so remember the sieving. You have two ideas. One idea is to cut the sieving area into suitable chunks. The second idea was mentioned yesterday. We had was to split the vector arrays in the right way. You have small primes, medium-sized primes, and large primes. And of course, you have to handle them differently, not to just to work with them properly for their size and not to waste time and money. So you have the small primes, the large primes, which are not that dense, of course, and you might waste time. And finally, if you have such a sealing area, you end up only with such a proportion of survivors. And here's the sieving memory, which goes over the whole area. And what you do is you go through the vector-based elements. Log P is stands for the size of the contribution, and E is the position. And then we sort the contribution data with respect to this position, AD, which is AB. And then you always sum up. And if it's over the bound, depending on E, you might have a contribution or not a potential sieving report. As I mentioned, we use this lattice sieving. Here's again the reference. And especially if you use this lattice sieving, you only consider the most promising candidates, which helps a lot. The advantage is this. There are some drawbacks. You have complexer computations, higher initialization costs. You remember you have to intersect these lattices, and before every P, of course, you have to set up the computations again. There are some duplicates. But definitely, lattice sieving is the most efficient sieving techniques in theory, also in software, and quite obviously also in hardware. So then for the sharp machine, you have basically this structure. Maybe the other picture is nicer to explain it. Oh, it takes a while. Okay. You have three parts. This is part three. two and one, and it basically refers to the three parts of the factor base. You here you treat more or less on the fly the small primes, here the medium primes which are stored a bit, and here you treat the big primes with which are the thing you really have to deal with. And so for the shark machine you had here 1,024 machines like this, and your these positions correspond to the factor base. And as you see, if you shrink the factor base, immediately you have a smaller machine, and of course then you have to do more ECM, which would be a good option if people don't like the large butterfly. Then you might shrink the ceiling area and then you're better off. Or as Colin mentioned, you take into account some more costs. And finally, okay, here the primes come in, and then you check it on the sieving area, and then of course they have to be brought to the right chunk where you actually sieve, and all that is done by the transport system. And you have, of course, for every special queue, you have to do the process, and then you have to consider both polynomials, F0 and F1. And if F0 is already through, then F1 just and it's still here, then F1 also already comes in. So you do it, many things you do at the same time, and they end up all here in the unit, which finally sums up and checks whether the pairs came through. And then after some more computations, like a primality test, some trial division, maybe some pi minus one, you end up in the ECM to also do the compositeness tests. And what we did here were stuck to certain parameters, but more or less without ECM support. But as you might see here, the big question is to find out the right parameters to maybe shrink the sieving area in the right way, maybe coming down with the H2XC, with the factor base limits or the sieving area, just to a nice point to do so many things into the ECM support that at the end the sum is best. And that's the big challenge to actually design the best machine to find out this balance. And for all these numbers, the best is to rely on very good software experiments and a lot of experience. And already for the shark machine, for that shark machine, we used a lot of software experiments done by the Bonn University group, which gave us nice parameters. And Thorsten also did some new experiments you might see in his talk then, to really optimize these parameters. So the transport system was already explained. So I show you at least the estimate we did in 2005, which is really outdated, but just to give you an impression what you have to consider: the memory, then the costs of the processors, the power supply. We thought it would need a lot of energy, and then some extra control. No ECM here in that part. And then we thought of 2,300 machines. Maybe it could be less or more, just depending on your design. And so we ended up with the 200,000, but it's just an old number. So, but what was basically the message that it is realizable with today's technology that you have this nice modular design, the small ASICs, and that the real work begins when you optimize here with better choice of parameters, with more ECM, and the best transport system you actually might find. So there, then I would like to conclude with some general remarks. So definitely the best estimates of costs of special hardware for a tax, of the costs of special hardware for a tax is the best to evaluate helix and the security of algorithms. The main challenges are here, find out the balance between sieving and ECM, and as well the balance between sieving and matrix. Yes, maybe the first one is more important, because if you really optimize the whole sieving step and you don't consider what's going on with the matrix step, you also might lose some money, because maybe you end up with a matrix which is too large, and you might like to end up with a smaller matrix, not to use too much memory, for instance, or too much communication in the matrix step. So you also have to consider that in simulations before you actually go into fine tuning. And what we think is that just these shark-like designs help a lot to understand how far we can really go with conventional design.